The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 56, Duet. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is the director of Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Fred Collins, and welcome everyone to Radio City Playhouse. Two causes for celebration this afternoon. The first, the return of our good friend and favorite maestro, Dr. Roy Scheel, to Radio City Playhouse, in company, of course, with his orchestra. The second, the appearance of our regular announcer, Fred Collins, in his first starring role. As well as being a top-notch announcer, Mr. Collins is also an extremely talented and sensitive actor. A hearty welcome, then, to Roy Scheel, and very best wishes to Fred Collins. Our show today is an experiment in grouping. Under the title Duet, we are presenting two quarter-hour stories, neither one of which is long enough for a half hour, but both so unusual we felt you'd want to hear them. Here is the first, called simply The Lake, and starring Fred Collins.
Now I'm grown up, but I remember it all so clearly. Most of all, I remember Tally with her blonde pigtails and the sun shining on her 12-year-old shoulders. I remember the beach in Michigan, kids on yellow sand, bouncing balls, a gull or two, the lake, afternoons of swimming, and then Mama rubbing me down with a big, fluffy, white towel.
You've had enough swimming for today, Harold.
Darling, hold still.
Oh, that's it.
I get goosebumps, haven't I, Mama?
Now you're back.
Oh, that's it. Now, dry your ears yourself.
Okay.
And put your sweater on. I don't want you to catch cold, because... Well, what's the matter, darling?
I was just thinking.
Thinking?
I wish Tally was here.
I know, son. So do I. Darling, try not to think about it. There's nothing anybody can do.
The beach was long and lonely, with only about six people on it. It was September, the last days when things are getting sad for no reason. The hot dog stands were boarded up like coffins burying the summer. The wind had come and touched the sand and blown away all of the million footprints of July and August. The merry-go-round was hidden with canvas and the horses were frozen in midair on their brass poles. There was something about the loneliness that made me want to get away by myself. So I ran up the beach until Mama was only a brown speck on the sand, and I was alone. Always before, with a crowd around, I hadn't dared look at this place where Tally swam out into the water and never came back. She wouldn't sit across from me in school any longer. She had gone too far out. And the lake would never let her return.
Come back, Tally. Please come back. I'll build a castle, Tally, like we always did. I'll build one half, and you build the other half. Tally, come back, Tally.
I was only 12, but I knew how much I loved her. It was that love that comes before all significance of body and morals. It was a love that is no more bad than the wind and sea and sand lying side by side forever. It was made of all the warm, long days together at the beach and the humming, quiet days of droning education at the school. It was made of all the long past when I had carried her books and done everything she asked me. All I wanted was one glimpse, one sign, one little bit of tally to remember. But the lake had her now, cold and sodden and sad. Then I knelt and built a sandcastle, shaping it fine, building it as Tally and I had often built so many of them. But this time, I only built half of it.
Tally, if you hear me, please come in and build the rest. Please, Tally.
Then I started back up the beach to the faraway speck that was Mama. I looked back once, but Tally hadn't come. The water had blended the sandcastle, circle by circle, mashing it down little by little into the original eggshell smoothness. The next day, I went away with Mama on a train. We were moving to California for good. And the train soon put the lake behind me. It put everything behind me. The rivers, the bridges, the valleys and the cottages, the hurts and the joys. I lengthened my bones, put flesh on them, changed my young mind for an older one, threw away clothes as they no longer fitted, shifted from grammar to high school to college to law. And then there was a girl in Sacramento. I knew her for a time, and then I married her. At 27, I started to practice law, and by the time I was 30, Margaret and I thought we should take a trip east, and that we should stop off for a day in my hometown. Stop off at Lake Bluff.
I think it's a charming little town.
It's little, all right.
Surely there's somebody you could look up. Not much use stopping over for a whole day if you're not going to get in touch with anybody.
Oh, I don't particularly want to look anybody up, Margaret. I just want to see the house where I was born.
I'd like to see that, too.
You know, I wish there was somebody. Just so I could show them you.
Lake Bluff! Next stop, Lake Bluff!
I felt my old world gather me back into its living. Margaret looked so handsome in her fine new clothes. She held my arm as the train slid into Bluff Station. Then we got off and walked through the streets. I saw no one I recognized. Oh, there were faces with echoes in them. But so many years. And the things they do to people. We walked and walked, and only I was filled up inside with all those memories. Like leaves stacked for autumn burning. At the end of the afternoon, we walked to the beach. It was as late in the year as that day so many years before. You know, Margaret, I used to swim here every day of my life.
Well, it's 4:45, Harold. I think we'd better have dinner and get back to the station. The train... What is it, Harold? Harold, you're white as a ghost. What is it?
Wait here, will you, Margaret? Please sit down and wait here.
Harold, where are you going? Harold, come back here. Don't be ridiculous, Harold!
As I ran down the beach away from Margaret, I felt 12 again. 12 and very little and afraid. All I could see was the lifeguard getting out of a rowboat with a gray sack in his hands. A small gray sack, not very heavy. I stopped him as he was walking across to the lifeguard's house. He put the gray sack down on the sand, and I begged him, pleaded with him to open it.
I'm sorry, mister. I don't know who you are, but I'm not going to open this sack. It's a little girl, and it's not pleasant.
Little girl?
Yeah. It's a funny, funny thing. There's been 8 kids drowned here since 1931, but we recovered all of them before a few hours. All except one. This one. She must have been in the water for years and years. What's the matter, mister?
Isn't there some way you can tell me who she is?
There's nothing left, mister. Nothing. Just this locket. That's all there was left. A locket.
I didn't see her, but I knew it was Tally. I knew it from the locket because I had given it to her on her 12th birthday. It had cost Mama $2.95. I thought to myself, people grow. I have grown, but she has not changed. She is still small, still young. She still has golden hair and 12-year-old shoulders. She will be forever young. And dearest God, I will love her forever and ever. I stumbled away from the lifeguard in the gray canvas sack. I walked on to the place where he had found her. Then I saw it. I saw at the water's edge a sandcastle, only half built. Just like Tally and I used to build them. She built half, I built half. I looked at it through the tears, and I saw the little footprints coming in from the lake and then going back out into the water and not ever returning. As I knelt in the sand to build my half of the castle, I could hear myself calling her that day so long ago. And somehow I thought I could hear her answer me softly, gently. Then I stood up and walked off quickly so as not to watch the sandcastle crumble in the waves as all things crumble. I walked back up the beach knowing that I would love her forever and ever and ever. I came to a bench where a strange woman was sitting. A strange, handsome woman who smiled at me indulgently and kindly. A strange woman who was my wife. Hello, Margaret, I said. And now this is Fred Collins as your announcer to say that you are listening to Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 56, Duet. You have just heard The Lake by Ray Bradbury. Now Collector's Item by Roald Dahl, with Bernard Grant, Bill Lipton, and featuring Leon Janney as Carlos.
The bet itself was harmless enough, but the stakes were insane, incredibly insane. But then that's the way Carlos was. Old and evil and dangerous and completely insane. It happened in Cuba, where I was holidaying at one of the best hotels. In the bar one afternoon, I got to chatting with a young American sailor named Jerry McCormick. Now, Jerry had a cigarette lighter, and that's how the bet was made. A funny-looking little old man asked us if we had a match, so Jerry offered him his lighter. Then we got to talking about the lighter, and this little old man bet his Cadillac that Jerry couldn't light it 10 times in succession. He insisted that Jerry and I go to his room for another cocktail. Then, he said, he'd explain everything.
One more martini, gentlemen, please. Then I explain the bet.
Not for me, thank you.
Nor me.
You've got us rather curious about the bet.
I have?
Well, yes, you have.
Let me get it straight. Are you betting me your Cadillac that I can't light my lighter 10 times in succession without missing?
My Cadillac, yes. It's expensive car. American car.
But, well, what's Jerry supposed to bet? He's just a sailor, you know. He doesn't make that kind of money.
I can't very well put up $5 against your Cadillac.
No, that is true.
Then what do I put up?
You are both Americans, yes?
That's right.
New York.
You like the good bet.
Look, Mr., I'm afraid I can't pronounce your name.
Call me Carlos. Everybody calls me Carlos.
Okay, Carlos. Well, what does he put up? That's what we want to know, see?
You say the lighter always works?
That's right. Never misses.
Never?
Well, practically never.
And you want my Cadillac, yes?
Well, sure I want your Cadillac. Never had a car like that in my life. The point is, what do I put up?
Ah, well, I would tell you. You, my young sailor friend, you will put up, as you say, the little finger of your left hand.
My what?
You're joking.
My little finger.
Your little finger.
What woodwork are you out of, mister?
Woodwork? I do not understand that.
Come on, Jerry. He's, you know.
You make fun of me, yes? I bet fair bet. I am man of word. I bet Cadillac.
Look, Mr. Carlos, it was very nice of you to pour us a cocktail.
I am fond of betting. You say lighter is sure thing. I bet. If you have not the sportsmanship, all right, go. I bet car. You bet finger. That is all.
But how can I bet my little finger? If you take my little finger, you have to take me with it, don't you?
I mean, you don't mean that you'd...
Yes. Yes, that is what I mean. I take the finger.
You mean cut it off?
Yes. Like that.
Holy smokes.
This is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Not ridiculous. Not at all. I should tie one of your hands to the table before we started. And I should stand there with knife, ready to chop the moment your lighter missed.
Look, Jerry, don't take this seriously. I never heard of anything so ghoulish in my life.
What year is the Cadillac?
Last year. 1948. Here. From the window, you see? Look. No, at the front of the driveway. The green one. It's fine car.
Yes.
1948 Cadillac. But I can see you are not good sport. You are afraid of little bet.
Come on.
Wait a minute.
Now, look, Charlie.
I said wait a minute.
You think for a minute that you're going to...
Look, pal, that's a fine hunk of car. All right. Carlos.
Jerry, don't be crazy.
I'm not crazy. I think it's a fine bet.
It was unbelievable, completely unbelievable. Yet it happened. Jerry's little finger against the old man's Cadillac. He must have been very old, almost 70, but it was hard to tell. He phoned for the maid. Then we sat down and waited. We didn't say anything while we waited for the maid.
You rang, sir?
Ah, Martha, yes, I rang. We are going to play a little game here.
Game?
I want you to bring me 3 things. Some nails, a hammer, and some strong cord.
Nails, hammer, cord.
Yes, and also a butcher's chopping knife.
A chopping knife?
Please, Martha. It's no harm. A chopping knife you can borrow in the kitchen. It's just a game.
Chopping knife? I do not know.
Here, Martha. Take this.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You bring me chopping knife now?
Yes, sir. I bring nails, hammer, cord, and chopping knife.
Look, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy.
It's all right, chum. I'll win.
Good. You win, you get Cadillac.
But supposing you lose?
So I lose. Come to think of it, I can't ever remember having any use for the little finger of my left hand. It's never done a thing for me. Besides, I'll win. It's a good lighter.
And it's your finger.
That's right.
Here. Keys to the car. You. You be referee. You hold keys.
No, no, no. Now, supposing you put the keys on the dresser.
All right. There. Keys on dresser. Papers and owning papers in pocket of car.
Jerry and I just sat and stared at him. There was a woman's dressing gown across one of the twin beds, and I wondered who'd be fool enough to marry a man like Carlos. The maid brought the stuff all right. He'd given her a handful of bills. He moved the writing desk over to the window. It was the usual kind of hotel writing desk, about 4 feet by 2.5. Then the little man removed the writing things and hammered two nails into the desk, about 6 inches apart. He didn't hammer them all the way in. And all of a sudden, with a sort of sick feeling, I realized that he'd done this before. Oh, he'd done it many times before. He knew exactly what he was doing.
There! He's finished. Now, young man, come over here, please.
Just exactly what do you want me to do?
Sit down first. Sit down at the desk.
Now?
Place the left hand between these two nails.
Like that?
Good. It's very good. The nails are only so I can tie your hand in place.
Tie his hand? Look, I think this...
You are referee, that is all. Boy has made the bet. It's fair bet.
But... All right. If you've made up your minds... I'll keep quiet.
Good! I tie the cord around your hand. Like that. One, two, three.
Not taking any chances, are you?
Under, then over. Around the nail.
Hey, not too tight.
And again, around the wrist. And there. He's firm now. Now, clench the fist.
Okay.
All except the little finger, please. You must leave the little finger sticking out. Good. With your right hand, you manipulate the lighter. Where is Chopper? Ah, it's here. It's good and sharp. I hold Chopper so. You miss once, then a chop. We are agree?
I'm ready.
You, senor. You will count out loud the number of times he lights it.
I'll do my own counting.
Then go ahead.
Can I, have one try that doesn't count?
Sure. I sport. This time, no count.
Hey, that's funny. It hasn't missed for days.
You feel it, maybe? The lighter flew?
Oh, no. That would wet it. It'll work.
Then you start, yes? Go ahead.
All right. Here I go. One. That's two. That's three.
Go on, will you stop?
Keep your shirt on, mister, and don't get nervous with that chopper.
Then go on.
Four. Five. I dropped it, sorry. It's five, right? Okay. Six. Seven. Eight.
Carlos! Carlos!
She was a small, black-haired woman, rather old. She grabbed his wrist, threw the chopper on the bed. She slapped him. She shook him so fast you couldn't see him.
Then she shoved him into a chair, and he sat there with his hands over his eyes, not making a sound.
Carlos, lo has hecho por la última vez, ¿me entiendes? You, señores, I'm so terribly sorry. I'm so terribly sorry this should happen. Please, do not say anything. Please just go. For 10 minutes, I'll leave him alone to have my hair washed, and he is at it again. Untie your hand quickly and please go.
But I only had 2 more to go. I was
please,
at 8.
Please, senor.
That's true. I saw the whole thing, you know. He could have won the bet.
He bet you the car, I suppose.
I'll say he did. What goes on here anyway? It was a fair bet.
I am so ashamed. Down where we live, he is a menace. Twice, they have almost put him in the asylum. I am so ashamed.
All right, so he's crazy. But I won that car. Well, I could have won it anyway.
The car is mine. He has nothing. He has nothing left in the world. I want it all from him. Please, give me the keys of the car.
I pointed to the car keys on the dresser. The woman went over and picked them up. She seemed like a very nice person. But her hand, I can see it now. It had only a thumb on it. And one finger.
You have just heard Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 56, Duet, consisting of 2 quarter-hour stories, The Lake and Collector's Item. The Lake was based on a short story by Ray Bradbury and was adapted for radio by Harry W. Junkin. Collector's Item was by Roald Dahl and was adapted by June Thompson. Members of the cast included Bernard Grant, Leanne Janney as Carlos, Bryna Rayburn, Connie Lemke, Bill Lipton, and Butch Cavell. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. The entire production was under the direction of Harry W. Junkin.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week on Radio City Playhouse, a tender and very beautiful love story, Ground Floor Window by Ernest Canoy. That's next week, Attraction 57 on Radio City Playhouse. Good afternoon, everybody.
Be sure to hear Dorothy McGuire and Cornell Wilde in the romantic comedy Coquette on Theater Guild on the Air this evening on NBC. This program has come to you from New York. Fred Collins speaking, you're tuned for the stars on NBC.